Welcome fathers who are looking to inspire their kids and become fearless. This is the Become a Fearless Father show and I'm your host, Klaas van Oosterhout. I'm a father of two boys, husband and entrepreneur. This show is created to teach you how to take control and enjoy the most difficult job you've ever faced, fatherhood. I'm going to keep it real and share real life experience. A heads up, there is no magic pill. You will have to put in the hours, sweat and tears to achieve victory. Are you ready to improve your health, wealth, relationships, knowledge and become the hero your family needs you to be? I know you are. So get your pen and paper ready and let's become fearless fathers together.
All right, so here we go. Thank you very much everybody for joining me live on another interview for Become a Fearless Father. I have the utmost pleasure to be here today with Niji Sobo. He's my mentor for almost a year now, and man, he has changed my life, and we'll be getting into that as well. But first, Niji, thanks for being on. Let's start with getting to know you a little bit better for people that do not know you at the moment and hear a little bit about your story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. First of all, this means a lot that I'm doing this interview right now. I remember first meeting you and seeing how far you've come. It's amazing, man. So I'm glad to be here. Like you said, my name is Niji Sobo. I am from Portland, Oregon. Third of four boys, Nigerian pops. Mom's from California. And grew up playing soccer. Fell in love with football. And basically rode that passion all the way to the NFL. I got the chance to play in the NFL for a couple years. But it got cut short due to injury, which was really, really frustrating, especially given how much time and, you know, energy I invested into the dream and what my goals and dreams were. But I had to deal with that disappointment and kind of figure out what's next. And afterward, I kind of wandered and struggled. At that point, when I was done playing football, I had four children. And I had my first son when I was 19 years old in college. And that really served well to put a lot of fire up under my belly and add the pressure. And one of the things I remember even about having a kid, and it really is a mindset how you approach it, because I remember when I first had a kid, a lot of people would tell me, man, that's not that sucks, but you know, like, man, that must be so hard, you know, you're in college. And I'm glad I never really looked at it that way. I always felt like it was motivation for me. And I know that sounds kind of cheesy, and I don't mean motivation and like, oh yeah, like I love my son, I want to succeed for him, which is also true, but almost like I have to do this. Like I have to. And I'm someone who now embraces and enjoys and loves the power that pressure plays in driving you to succeed. And again, it's not like you talk about motivation, it's not always positive necessarily. It's also like the negative things that could happen, really imagining those and making sure that you associate with those, and that made me move faster. So fast forward, done with football, struggling, didn't know what to do, married at this point, four kids, and trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And I was broke, man. I was working at a factory, did not enjoy working there, obviously, and trying to figure out what I wanted to do next in terms of career, decided to become a firefighter, and was able to accomplish that goal, poured a lot of energy into that goal. At that point, I had met a mentor as well who also changed my life, introduced me to books that I was reading, and I started reforming my habits and like how I looked at life, and I realized how much I was kind of drifting or wandering, and how far I was led astray from what led me to be able to get into the NFL. So became a firefighter, but quickly realized that being a firefighter was not going to get me where I wanted to be financially, especially with now a family of seven. So now at this point I had five children. My wife and I, our game plan was for her to stay with the kids and, you know, and pour into the kids energy wise. Five of them is a lot. So she's managing a big household, so she doesn't work. And it was like, yo, man, like, I don't know that I want to be gone every third day, you know, for 24 hours at a time and making, you know, 60 to 80 grand a year. So at that point, I started increasing the amount of learning that I was doing. And my eyes were open to what I can do in terms of the impact that I can have in my particular skill set and experience, and also the way that I can deliver, you know, obviously through the internet. Even just think about what we're doing right now. You're in Spain. We're sitting here having a conversation as if like it feels like we're together, right? And so what the internet has done in the ability to be able to reach people, and that evolved into me deciding to help and work with athletes, showing them the mindset that they need to dominate consistently under pressure. Because I was starting to be aware of how many athletes think that, you know, thought that squatting and like, you know, ladder drills was going to get them to the next level, when it's really your mindset. I was just watching even the NBA just the other day. I don't know if you go watch the NBA, but Jimmy Butler, who just got traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves, or from the Timberwolves to the Sixers. He was like, man, he said 90% of it is mental. 90. Like, because this year we're watching like first round draft picks who are supposed to be like, you know, the big deal, struggling, not able to adjust because mentally they don't know how to handle the pressure. So I committed to being the best in my field at that. And I look back at all the times where I played and realized what got me to a certain point. Also look back at what led me to struggle and build my business. It's called I'm Not You. I have two podcasts. We have tons of coaching groups, ton of content that we produce, and just having a blast, man, like living life the way that I want to live. Like I said, five children, teaching my children the same mindset is a big challenge as well, but it's super fun. And just enjoying it, man. And that's where I'm at now.
Awesome, man. I love hearing your story. Of course, over the year, I've heard it several times. Every time there's something new, every time it inspires the hell out of me. So I really appreciate you taking the time to really explain it all some details. You know, you're not just now, for me, you're like, you know, you've became one of my, well, you're my mentor. You're actually my first real long-term mentor, but you also became somebody to look to and look for. Like, if I can figure out my own high standard, I look at you and sometimes I think like, okay, what would need you to do, especially with you with my absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Anyway, man, before I go off on a rant, thanks for sharing that part. Look, man, I want to dive into stuff in just in a second. I want to do for the first time something really different, because you've been through a lot and you got five kids, a complete different setup as well. As in, not all five are with the same, from the same wife that you have now, etc. Right. So just for everybody out there, just starting off right away, what's like the biggest golden nugget that you can share as a father? Because you mentioned something really big, saying, look, I was 19, was in college, I got my first kid, and it actually fired me up, while most people would actually be really afraid and maybe even run away. So that first big nugget, man, let's start off with that.
Absolutely, man. So I'll go kind of big picture and then kind of explain what I mean by this. So the tendency for people, especially fathers, especially when you have challenging situations. So there, I mean, it like increasingly now, like there's more, it's not so uncommon now for a man to be married to a woman and for them to have a blended family. It's much more common now, right? So you're dealing with other parents, you're dealing with people who have been divorced and all sorts of things. So life presents all of these challenges, especially for the father. And the tendency is to secretly or not so secretly wish that it were easier. Do you know what I'm saying? So what that looks like, some men complain and whine and bitch and shit like that. Some men avoid reality and drink themselves into a flurry and, you know, sit down on the couch eating potato chips. Some men lose themselves in their work and kind of ignore their family and don't really invest in those type of relationships. So there's a lot of ways that shows up. And no one's really exempt. I feel like all fathers, I mean, especially with how complex it is and how hard being a father is, it's natural to want to like wish things were different. The turning point for me as a father, and when I say turning point, it's not to say that, you know, things are easy. Absolutely not. I believe being a father is one of the hardest jobs on earth, along with being a mother. Just being a parent is hard. But the turning point for me came when I decided to literally own every aspect of my life, particularly with my kids. So let me explain what I mean by that. I don't mean try to control everything, because I've done that. I've tried to say like, no, we're going to do this. And, you know, I want things to go this, this, and this. It doesn't mean that, you know, I become rigid and inflexible and, you know, out of touch with reality. What that means to own every aspect is to literally look at every piece of reality that is my life and my children. So I say, okay, I have two sons with another woman. This woman is really difficult to deal with. Here's how she is. Boom, boom, boom. I have another daughter, my stepdaughter. Her family is also hard to deal with. There's a lot of aspects of that that are really, really, really hard to deal with. I have the dynamics with my wife. I also have the fact that I've chosen to be an entrepreneur. I don't want that. And those are challenges as well. I also have kids who are young. I also enjoy working from home and don't want to not work from home. So there's also challenges that come along with that. So me looking at every aspect of my life and saying, this is my life. And I love that shit. Now, it's not perfect. And there's a lot of problems and there's a lot of challenges. But instead of approaching those problems and challenges from a place of fear and like, man, I wish this wasn't true, I approach them as if, yo, this is my life. You know what I'm saying? And I'm going to figure this shit out or I'm going to die trying. You know, so it's pretty much the 50 cent mentality. Get rich or die trying. So the golden nugget is for fathers to stop bitching, stop complaining, stop running. Because some of them don't run or bitch and complain. Some of them just run. Some of them just ignore shit. Stop ignoring it. Confront it. Look at the shit. Look at it and say, this is what's true. Yep. This boom, 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 boom. And deal with it head on. And that's really messy. So that means having tough conversations. That means spending time getting your finances together. That means spending time getting your health right. And what's funny is when a real father like basically looks at his life head on, he'll realize 90%, shit, I would even say more, about 95% of the work is on yourself. It's like, so the problem has been you, if you will, talking to the fathers. And again, that kind of opens your mind up to like, man, I've been spending all my time complaining about this, this, and this. My health ain't right. Shit, I don't know what's going on with my finances. I'm at a job I don't like. Shit, I don't spend no time with my wife. I don't know how to manage my time. I don't know what's going on with my kids. That's all on you. So that's really the major key, if you will. And I feel like, and that's why I love what you're doing with Fearless Father. That's to me what it means to be fearless. It's like fearlessly accepting and facing reality consistently on a daily basis. And then dealing with that truth in order to get where you want. And then, of course, having a vision as well, which is something I know you believe heavily in. That's a big part of my philosophy as well. So that's what I would say off top, man.
Awesome, man. Loving it. As always, love the nugget. Thanks for that. And we'll pick out some details that I want to talk about, including the vision.
Hey, sorry for the interruption. I know you're really enjoying the show. Just want to make sure if you're liking this information, please subscribe and press the like button. And also, go visit becomeafearlessfather.com. You get the opportunity to share your biggest challenge at the moment as a father. And it gives me the opportunity to try and help you overcome this. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of the show.
You were talking about finances. I want to start off with, because the first time we got in contact was in regards to mindset and in regards to a different entrepreneur project that I was working on. And we actually, our first conversation, we actually started talking about finances. And I can remember, I'm going to share some things during this story right now that I haven't told you, you don't even know yet. We didn't have the camera on, and I was crying during that conversation. I mean, you can hear it, but I was really emotional touch because, you know, I was really struggling with this, and it was also affecting the relationship with my wife. And, you know, you worry a lot about your kids and stuff. And, you know, during the conversation, you motivated me into joining Killer Instinct, which has been absolutely phenomenal. It also helped me with dealing with death. You know, nobody talks about it. We'll dive a little bit more into it later on. I was sweating. I was nervous, struggling, hyperventilating, you know, everything like that. And everything I started implementing as soon as you started talking about, you know, what you just spoke about, face up, take responsibility, face your fears, look for your challenges and change it. And I started implementing everything in a morning routine. And that has completely changed my life. So first, and I thank you very much many times, often.
Absolutely, man.
Never like this online live. So I want to do that right now so everybody knows, man, I am so grateful for this year. You have changed my life completely. So thank you. You've been a blessing to my life and to my family. So that's
what I gotta say, man, I appreciate that. And when you say, man, and for those listening, fearless father, right? You hear the word fearless, and this is something I feel very strongly about. And I get chills thinking about it as well, because the dream for a coach, if you will, is when you're sharing things with someone you're teaching, that they take it and they do it. Klaus is someone who has literally fearlessly applied damn near everything that I've laid out. And when you Killer Instinct, we lay out a lot of shit. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of people who can't handle the type of reality that you will have to face. And so fearless doesn't mean you don't feel fear. Klaus mentioned, like, he was crying. He had fear. Like, we all have fears and things that we deal with every day. But one thing I've always admired about you, Klaus, is that you are someone, and everyone knows this about you, you face reality. Like, you talk about shit. You're not one of those men who is like, nah. Like, you talk about things, and you don't do it in a way to, you know, gain sympathy or to have people pity you. You say, nah, like, this is what's true for me, and this is what I want. And we've watched you evolve to where you're now getting the things that you want. Like, you're building it. And it's so it's been my pleasure as much as it's been yours. So, and I appreciate you saying that, man.
Thanks, man. So in regards to talking about the morning routine, it's actually funny. We just talked about it during our high performance call this week. But can you explain for everybody how does your morning routine work? And in such a way, because I'm a little afraid as soon as you're going to say what time you get up, like most people know, for example, Eric Thomas, a motivational speaker, he always says, I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, but he doesn't say, for example, you know, what he does during the day or what time he goes to sleep, etc. So, yeah, you know how it works, you know, as straight as possible. And
yeah, definitely. I will do that, man. And I love Eric Thomas as much as I love, you know, a lot of these people that I hear. And it is something you miss. It's like, okay, well, tell us the full story. Like, right. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make sure I give you guys the full reality of my morning routine. But I'm first going to start off with my philosophy on why the morning is so important. So obviously I was an athlete and I still think like an athlete. I'm a competitor. I like to use analogies like war and game time and shit like that. It speaks to me, right? So if I'm looking and saying, okay, I got a year, right? Let's just break it down to a year. A year is 365 days. I have 365 days to accomplish my goals, let's say, right? And you can apply this to any amount of time you have. Every day matters. So every day is it's like a boxer. Every round matters. If I make sure that I don't waste any days, if I use 365 days effectively, damn. I mean, come on, I'm most likely going to make a lot of progress. Now, if I use half of those effectively, obviously my chances of success go down and down and down. So then I say, okay, in order for me to effectively approach each day and dominate and kill that shit, wouldn't it make sense for me to start the day in a certain type of way to get me and the state of mind that I need in order to crush that day? I see a lot of people who get burned out, and it's not that I'm confused by that. I could relate to it, but it doesn't have to be the case. What if you just approached each day like it's a new day? You recharged, you set up, right? And almost like a CrossFit, like in CrossFit, the idea is that you have fast recovery times. You do a set, and the faster you recover. Now, in order to do that, you have to push yourself, right? So that's the idea. It makes perfect sense to me to start each day in a way that gets me focused, et cetera. So that's first. Now, the next thing after that is basically the strategy behind my morning routine, and that shifts, but it's kind of pretty much the same. The idea is that I have certain things that must be done in the morning based on who I am. So let's just take, for example, working out. I'm not someone who likes to work out after I'm done working. I'm usually pretty exhausted after I'm done working, and I've tried to work out at night. That doesn't work. So working out, I either don't do it or I do it in the morning. So I got to do it in the morning, because if I don't do it, then I'll be out of shape, and we obviously know what happens there. So working out, right? Then I identify other things that need to be done in the morning in order to get me in that peak state of mind. Reading. I believe in reading. I read a ton of books. Books have changed my life. Literally, I can name several books that have changed and altered the direction and the course of my life. $7 books on Amazon that have just completely, to where I feel I well up with tears when I think about the author, just how grateful I am for having wrote that book. So I got to read every day. I got to plan my day, right? I actually do that the night before, and I'll explain that as well, but I got to review my plan for the day, et cetera. So eat breakfast, boom, 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 connect with my family, et cetera. So what I did was I said, all right, this is all the shit I got to do. Let me line that up in a way that makes sense and is seamless, right? So wake up, okay, I like to, you know, work out. Okay, then after that, shower up, get dressed. Then after that, connect with my kids. I take my kids through my morning routine or through their morning routine. I don't want to be so much isolated. I'm someone who likes to be alone, so I like being by myself in the morning, but I also want to connect with my kids. Then when am I going to meditate as well? When am I going to read, plan, work on my life, the infrastructure of my life? All these things need to happen. Then I say, shit, how long is that going to take? Let's say like 4 to 5 hours. Looks like, and I got to be ready to work by 9 a.m. Looks like I got to get up at 4:20. You know what I mean? And that determines my wake up time. I don't wake up at 4:20 because I like it, because I don't. Every single morning when I wake up, there's a voice saying, ah, maybe you should go back to sleep. I'm tired most mornings. I go to sleep anywhere from 10 to midnight, actually anywhere from 10 to 12:30 p.m. It's been a little later than I would like to lately. Very rarely am I asleep by 10 or let alone 9. So I'm not getting a ton of hours of sleep, but I do agree with Eric Thomas. Sleep is overrated, man. And I know there's a lot of people who disagree, and maybe my mindset will change about this as I learn more and things like that. I just feel like there's only so much time that we have on this earth. I have a choice. Do I want to sleep? Do I want to work on my life? Do I want to spend time with my family, work out? I'd rather sleep when I'm dead. That makes more sense to me. Not only that, if you look at some of the most powerful, energetic, influential people who ever walked this planet, most of them didn't sleep a lot. And that gives me a lot of hope and joy as well. So basically, man, like I get up based on what time I have to get up. And there are certain things every morning that I must do. Also review my finances. I didn't mention that. Talk about the money playbook and things like that. But having a system for how you make sure your finances are in order and you feel in control. I'm a control guy as well. So I like to feel in control of my life. So everything in my morning routine is designed to put me in that state of mind. And that's how it works out.
I hear you. That's absolutely amazing. Well, I learned it from you, and it's helped me out as well, and tons of other people that you've been coaching. So one thing that I struggle with, and I'd like you to share with your view on that as well, is you know, it's not easy, especially in the beginning. We struggle. Even people listening now are thinking, "Wow, that's a great idea. I need to start with a morning routine," but they never do. Come up with excuses, you know, to finally decide, it's actually not that much that necessary. You know, what's your system to make sure you do the things that you absolutely must do or must be done to achieve, you know, your visions, for example, or what you set out for that day?
That's a great question. So I'll give you some baseline things, and then I'll give you the major key, which is the thing that if you do this, you will do it. So, but first let's back up. First, it's got to start with a general burning desire to want to alter the course of your life. So one of the reasons why I believe you have such a high follow-through rate and you implement at the level that you do is because you want to do that shit. You're at the level where you face reality enough. You've come face-to-face with the pain and the vision and said, look, man, I got to do this shit. So that's first, is having that burning desire. And some people aren't at that spot. You know, maybe someone listening to this podcast interview will get to that spot. Like, have you ever done that where you've heard some and it just got you to that point? You know, Tony Robbins calls it that leverage point, right? Where you have leverage over yourself. It's that point where it's like, yo, I got to do something. So whatever you can do to get to that point, do it. Learn, read, listen to podcasts. If you're at the stage right now listening where you're like, man, yeah, morning routine sounds cool, you know, but you know, this and this, you ain't ready. And I hope that you get ready sooner than later. But once you get ready, then it's like, okay, now let's craft it out. Let's actually engineer it. So I mean, getting into detail, times and everything. So I believe it's wise and makes practical sense to decide on the time you're going to wake up and stick to that time. Stick to that. Now, you won't always stick to it, but don't let up on a standard. That's the difference between people like you and I and other people. So we believe, yo, set the shit, and like, if you don't reach it, it's all good, but keep that standard, because the standard pushes you. A lot of people want to lower the standard, and that's a dangerous habit, because then you are going to do that in pretty much all areas. You say, oh, well, I haven't been able to do that, so why don't I just lower it? That basically just means you're afraid of failure. So keep the standard high. What's your wake-up time? Craft out your morning routine. Identify the things that need to be done. Planning in the morning, working out, etc. Everyone here, and especially those who listen to your show enough, they know, like, this is the type of shit you need to do. Everyone knows at this point. Some sort of journaling, meditating. There's a great book called Morning Miracle by Hal Elrod. He has this cool little formula, the Savers formula, where it's like, boom, like all of that shit you need to do, right? You don't need to do all of it. You can do some of it, but you know what you need to do. Then from there, I would identify the one major key. Like the thing, like let's say for someone listening working out, like, yo, I gotta do this. Pick one and attach what we call death ground consequences to it. So that means, you know, in The Art of War by Sun Tzu, ancient military strategist, right? He said, if you put your soldiers on death ground, they'll fight like they have the devil in them. So what he means by that is he would deliberately place his soldiers against a large river, big mountain, deep forest, and say, all right, this is how we're going to fight, because they had to win. They put themselves, you know, the whole idea behind, you know, take the island, burn the boat. The idea is that you want to find a friend or create some sort of circumstance in your household with your, I have to happen to do this with my son as well, but your wife, best friend, and say, listen, if I don't do this X amount of days, this is what's going to happen. Now, you kind of have to get creative about how you follow through with it. There's some, and I can get into more depth, but the idea is identify one habit and set it up so that you have to follow through. Now, how you do that is a lot of different ways, but basically you won't do it until you have to. Like, for example, let's say somebody who doesn't work out consistently, right? Let's say a 45-year-old man, he's a little out of shape. He's got, you know, three kids, doesn't work out consistently, but he works as a, you know, an accountant. And I would ask that accountant who's telling me, who's sitting here looking at me in the face and saying, I can't work out. I need to build this habit, et cetera, et cetera. Do you go late to work? He'd say, no, I'm on time every day. Why are you on time every day? Well, I have to. That's my job. No, you don't have to. There's a lot of people who don't come to work on time every day. Now, obviously, you get fired. Obviously, you won't be a good employee, et cetera. But the idea is that in your mind, you tell yourself you have to do it because the consequences are too great. In that particular case, the consequence is you could possibly get fired. What would happen if you attach that same mentality to working out? Death ground. That's death ground. It's like, yo, I got to do that shit. Like, and again, people who have a hard time waking up, but they'll wait overnight for a pair of Jordans. They'll get up at 4 a.m. to wait in line at Foot Locker for a pair of Jordans, but you got a hard time waking up. So identify that one habit and attach death ground to it, and you will follow through.
I hear. Yeah, that's really powerful. Great advice. Just another question, because you've been talking about this a couple of times, and especially also at the beginning in regards to fear. You know, there's so many fathers out there that get so much pressure, and they get so scared that they run away. I'm just wondering, what's your philosophy in regards to fear?
Mm-hmm. So my philosophy in regards to fear, fear is inevitable. It's something that all human beings feel. And there's no way around it. And as soon as you stop feeling fear is as soon as you are no longer a human being. So the idea is to embrace fear and do what must be done regardless of the fear. So that implies that you know what must be done, having some sort of vision. So in order to use fear in the right way, you have to have some sort of vision or place that you're going, destination that will drive you. So the way I use fear is helping me to identify where I need to improve, sometimes what I need to do, sometimes what I need to stay away from. So I feel like there's no real black and white, you know, signal that is fear. You know, I hear some people say sometimes, like, you know, fear is some, it means that you need to do it. No, fear is sometimes means you don't need to do it. So the wisdom comes with knowing the difference But either way, fear is a signal. It does not mean necessarily that you need to stop. It means that you need to analyze what's going on and stay true to your vision, have some sort of plan, and keep pushing forward.
I hear you. So during our conversation, we're talking a lot about vision, right? And I think it's part, if somebody actually mentioned the other day, you know, it's the easiest job in the world is being an average father. The hardest job in the world is being a fearless father. Really involved. And one of the parts of that, and you mentioned that, is having a vision, both for yourself and for your kids. How do you go about structuring this? Also, what you mentioned earlier in regards to you want to control all aspects, but you don't want to control your kids' lives completely.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. So let's see if I can lay this out. I've actually never articulated this, so this is good. Let's start with the vision for your kids. So in terms of setting the vision for yourself, that should be easier because you know yourself, you know what you want, et cetera. Now, when you have children and they're growing, you don't know what they're going to be. You don't know what they're going to like necessarily, how they're going to evolve, et cetera. So it becomes a little more challenging. But here's how I sort of approach it. And I've gotten to this point based on lots of mistakes. So here's my philosophy on setting a vision for your kids. I believe that when you're raising children, just imagine when you had a kid, they were a little baby. They didn't know nothing. They were just a blob of impulse and desire and fears. They learn from watching you. That's the first level of them learning and establishing their values of what's important in life. So to me, I take that very seriously. So some parents approach it more passively, like, okay, I'm kind of going to let my kids figure it out. But last time I checked, how much time, if your kids go to school, how much time are they spending around you now? Who are they around at school? What are they watching on TV? Those people are influencing your kids and helping them to establish their values as opposed to you. So what I do is I identify, what do I want my kids to value? Not like necessarily who do I want them to be, but like I know that their core values are going to influence the direction of life that they go in, what they are going to be, et cetera. I don't determine what, you know, calling they're going to have in life or what job they should have or what business they should have or anything like that. I am very open and fluid when it comes to that. But I do take seriously having a vision for what I want my kids to value. I want them to be fearless. I want them to be confident. I want them to not be afraid to speak up for themselves. I want them to be decisive and know who they are. I want them to value people and treat people right and respect themselves. I want them to have high standards. So these are all things that I can identify. So instead of saying, okay, my son Juwan, I want him to be this and this, and I want him to accomplish this, this, and this, I say, what's the picture that I have for Juwan in terms of how I see him behaving and acting and valuing? I can determine that, and I believe every parent should. Otherwise, somebody else is going to do it for you. There's a lot of advertisers out there who are plotting and scheming, creating visions for your kids, and they're succeeding. There's a lot of environments where kids are in, where the pull of that environment is influencing your kid instead of you. So knowing what you want your kids to value is important. Here's the other thing, though. What happens if you're married to someone and what you value is different from what they value, which is very common, has happened in my relationship with my wife as well, and can quite frankly cause a lot of problems. If you're someone who believes in, you know, speaking up for yourself, and you marry someone who happens to believe in harmonizing and making sure there's no conflict, that's kind of a big deal, right? So here's the way to rectify this, and it takes a lot of conversation, a lot of open dialogue. But instead of saying my values are better than yours and you should value what I value, you say, the father would say, this is what I think is important. I want my kids to be smart. You know, I want my kids to be like, you know, diligent and disciplined, and I want them to be really nice and courteous. All right. Let's say those are the top values from father. Now he would say, well, mother, what do you want the kids to be? And she would say, well, I want them to be athletic and be into sports, and you know, I want them to value having fun and adventures, and I also want them to be, you know, smart, right? So they align on one. but there's two values that the mother has where the father's like, I don't really think that's as important. But his job is to not say that's not important, or and to challenge himself to not feel that that's not important, because he's a father, she's a mother. They're equally important, and it's very important to be aligned. Then you combine those and you say, all right, here's what we want for our kids. So wife, since that's your values, and because you value that, you probably and hopefully live that yourself, you take lead of being the example in that. And me, I'm going to take lead in being the example of these things that I value. And if you and your wife can come to terms with that and accept that, and then create a game plan of how that's going to look like on a daily basis, you will be powerfully aligned. And that will, that's true harmony right there. And that's very, very uncommon. And that's something that I wish for a lot of couples, especially those who didn't do a lot of, didn't have a lot of those hard conversations before they got married. And then you find out you have different values later on.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's actually one of the things that that we're working on in my household, and we've been struggling with. We have different values in certain aspects. So yeah, this is why it's going to help me a lot in the upcoming weeks to talk about. Yeah. So I appreciate it, man. I'm just wondering, man, because you're talking about, you know, teaching your kids values, and you got five kids. How do you go about seizing the moment? Do you have that also structured, or does it just go, how do you set that up?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, man. And with everything, like, for example, if you're someone who values structure, then naturally you're going to not have as many spontaneous moments. So I am more of a certainty type of dude. I like structure in my own life. However, I actually could be kind of too much of the opposite with my family when I'm with them, and sometimes be almost too like whatever y'all want to do type of thing. So there is a balance, right? And I've also experienced the pain of, I've tried out the whole idea of, okay, this is what we're going to do at 2 o'clock, and then 3, we're going to take a nap, and it just doesn't work out that way. So to me, and this is what we do, like, for example, today after I'm done working, Thursdays are the day where my wife has, after I'm done working, she gets to do whatever she wants. She could stay home if she wants, but basically she's a ghost around the house. She's not responsible for any kids. Most times she leaves anyway. You know what I mean? She goes to hang out with her friends. She goes, gets her nails done, does whatever, right? So after I'm done working, it will basically be free time for me to do whatever I want with my kids. And that's when I do like to be spontaneous. I don't like to have too much structure. It's like, what y'all want to do? You want to play some video games? We got this cool park near our house. We can go to the movies. I love going to the movies. There's a theater around here called Cinetopia, and it's where, like, they have these big, it's like a living room, you know, like, and they got couches and they serve you food and everything. And my kids love it. And I love how my youngest, he loves going to the movies, which really excites me. But so that's how we have it worked out. Same thing. We have scheduled time. You know, this clause we teach, time blocks. So having blocks of time that you spend in certain areas. So me, I know once I'm done working is now the time that I'm going to be with my family. I know on Saturday or Sunday afternoons is the time in which me, my wife, and my children go out and about and basically do stuff that my wife wants to do. Like, she likes to go to the stores and stuff, go to the mall, go out to eat, go get some Thai food, etc. So Saturday morning are usually kids sports. And then at the nighttime is when I go on my date night with my wife. So trying to be clear on what I'm doing during my block of time. When I don't know what I'm doing, I kind of wander and drift. So by knowing what I'm doing, it doesn't mean I have to have like a list of everything that I'm doing. It's just saying, this is the theme of this block of time. So that's how I go about scheduling that.
Nice. I appreciate that. It's been one of the most asked questions from fathers that I've received so far is like, you know, how do you come up with the time and everything? And usually when you talk about different things that they could use to become a better father, the biggest excuse that they come up with is, oh yeah, but I can't do that. I don't have the time. So
right.
I appreciate you sharing that. So another thing, because, you know, I used to be, now I'm an entrepreneur, of course, but I used to be working from 9 to 5. I actually start calling it now my zombie father period, where, you know, I just, you wake up as late as possible, you rush to work, you come home late, tired, don't do much. And then, you know, Monday to Friday just goes by, and then the weekends, you don't do much either. And in regards to what I live now, what you're living is, you know, the entrepreneur dad, it frees up. You got so much time, you got control of your time, and you get all the time with your kids, etc. I'm just wondering, from your perspective, can you, you know, you've also been in that period where you worked from a 9-to-5 job, and can you share a little bit your view on what I call the zombie father versus an entrepreneur dad?
Yes. A lot of people have this idea that being the entrepreneur dad, if you will, is like really cool, and you get to hang around and sleep in your, or work in your pajamas, and, you know, eat cereal with your kids, etc. And first of all, let me say, being an entrepreneur dad is awesome. I will also say that it's not for everyone, and it's very, very difficult. As a matter of fact, one could argue it poses. It's actually easier to be a zombie dad. You know what I mean? Like, meaning you get to go to work when you're at work. You don't have to worry about your family. You get a secure paycheck. You know, you got your health benefits. You got this, this, and that. And you have a lot more certainty. Not only that, with the entrepreneur dad, you actually are in charge of your business, which is responsible for bringing you income. And you're 100% responsible for that. And you have to manage the people who are also working with you to help deliver those results. So I would, for those considering like going from being the zombie dad, and by the I believe what you mean by the zombie dad are you're just sleepwalking through life, you know? So to me, being the entrepreneur dad is being much more intentional and purposeful in everything that you do, which actually will bring you a lot more structure than you probably had when you were a zombie dad. So I'm way more disciplined, way more greedy with every minute than I was when I was a zombie dad. I get up earlier. I do a lot more shit throughout the day. I'm more tired when I go to sleep at night, but it's way more fulfilling. You're way more in control, which all the quote unquote fearless fathers out there also value control. You don't want to be living like not the type of life that you want to live. Most people who work at jobs, either a small percentage like it, most people hate it, but also most people act like it's cool or act like they have to do it, you know, and that's not really, there's a certain type of freedom that comes with knowing that you get to do whatever the hell you want to do, but it doesn't mean that you're going to do whatever the hell you're going to do. So the entrepreneur dad sets up boundaries for himself. He sets up structure for himself. He identifies the standards that he wants in different areas of his life. He schedules out his life. He doesn't just randomly live it. He schedules time with his children. He schedules to be with his wife. And when I say schedule, it doesn't mean, you know, you're talking to your wife, you know, putting her in your Palm Pilot. It means you're thinking about how am I going to get the most out of every single day? And when it's all yours, and this is, and cause we've seen this even with when you have all the time in the world, you usually don't get a lot done. When you put boundaries on yourself, that's when it starts becoming more real. So the entrepreneur dads can't work all day. I don't work all day. I could do that, and I have done that. It doesn't make for, you know, a peaceful household. So setting up boundaries for yourself, being disciplined, and if what I said makes you say, man, I'm gonna keep my day job, then you need to keep your day job. You know what I'm saying? Being an entrepreneur ain't no joke. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that a lot of people, especially in this online shit, and I'm gonna speak to that as well, because there's a lot of little, you know, Facebook ads and shit, and you'll see people trying to promote being this type of coach and all work 3 to 4 hours a week. That's a bunch of bullshit. If you're trying to build a business, it's going to take work. You got to get up early. You're going to have to struggle with things. You're going to be frustrated. You got to learn. The process of learning is not always easy. It's painful because you're being exposed to things you don't know, and it's taking a while to learn it. You're being exposed to weaknesses. So if you are, you know, if you're attracted to the idea of ease, you need to stay right where you're at, because it's hard to be in the jungle, but it's a lot more fun to kill a zebra and eat that shit than eat a frozen steak, you know what I mean, and be in a cage at the zoo. And so the zoo animals, those are the zombie fathers. And that's not right or wrong, you know, like in that movie Madagascar, that lion, he loved being in the zoo. You know what I'm saying? Some people love being in the zoo. Me and you, we're not like that. You know what I mean? And I imagine if there's fearless fathers listening, that you're not like that either, or at least you don't want to be like that. And that's what I value.
I hear you. So for those that are listening, DG, and that are like, wow, yeah, he's absolutely right. I need to, you know, step it up. And I actually really like what you just shared and how that, you know, I want to give it a shot for being an entrepreneur, Dad. What would you say would be the first step? So what are some of the things that you've learned along your way that you're like, oof, man, if I would have known that, that would have helped me out so much that I would have skipped like a half a year or a year of failing or I don't know.
That's a great question, man. Let me see if I can, let me literally think through this. I want to make sure I answer this properly. I would say, number one, it has to do with how you approach your wife first. So I'll start there, and then I'll also consider the dads who maybe aren't married and are single dads. But if you're married, you want to make sure that you spend the time necessary to get in sync with your wife about how you raise your children. I imagine if you married your wife, you loved her, you liked who she was, and you were in sync about how you and her were going to be together. But then you had children, and then you were aware of all the ways that you were different. You were aware of all the things you didn't have in common in terms of values, et cetera. Not only that, having children exposes a lot of the traumas that we went through as children. And when I say traumas, I just mean, you know, bad relationships you had with dad or mom, you know, insecurities, et cetera. It exposes this. So the time you spend getting in sync with your wife about your philosophy on parenting, how you raise your kids, what to do in this situation, what not to do, what things really, really trigger you, what things, you ever done something and your wife is like just pissed off and you're like, what? And then she might have done something and you're just steaming mad. Like, I can't believe she would do that. She's like, what? You got to get, you have to get in sync on that. And again, that's messy. You know what I mean? But, and this is why I believe so much in what you're doing. By establishing your philosophy on being a father, you're worlds ahead. Like, I mean, you're light years ahead of most people. And then of course you can share that with your wife and get in sync with her. If you do that, you will make love to your wife more often. You will have more fun. You will have less gray hairs. You will have more energy. You'll enjoy life a whole lot more, because that whole saying, you know, happy wife, happy life. I do believe that that's true to a certain degree. You want your wife to be happy. And if you guys are not in agreement on how you raise your kids, she's not going to be that happy. And you won't be that happy. And that's not fun for anyone. And I've dealt with that. And I'm learning the value of that. For those fathers who don't have a wife, I would say the thing to avoid, or the thing that I learned, is probably, this sounds really, really corny. I'm gonna go two ways with this. Number one, spend as much time with your kids as humanly possible. There's no substitute for time. You see what I'm saying? So even someone like me, you can say, oh yeah, I'm teaching all this shit and I can teach my kids this and I can be this model of success. There's no substitute for time. So spend as much time with your kids as possible. And I've gone through periods of time where I told myself I was still being a good father because I was, you know, living this type of example, but I wasn't spending the amount of time with my kids that was necessary. And as much flaws as my dad had, my dad spent time with his kids, man. He took us everywhere. And I valued the hell out of that. The other thing that I would say is this: let your kids be who they are, man. And what I mean by that is this, I'm gonna get specific. If you are a father who lets their kids be who they are, it doesn't mean you don't discipline them. It doesn't mean you don't train them. It doesn't mean you don't set boundaries, et cetera. It means that when you go to their games, don't say shit. Watch them play. They got a coach who can tell them. I don't even care if you played the sport. If your kid wants advice, they'll ask you. Show the kids that you like watching them play. When they like certain things that you don't seem to vibe with, unless it's inappropriate, if it's inappropriate or whatever, obviously you set some boundaries. Let them do what the fuck they want to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, why, when did, at what point did we as parents start feeling like they our kids have to be like us, or like they're a kid, they're a human. Like, you're just responsible for that human right now and helping them to raise them until they get old. But you don't want to create a clone of you, because if you're honest, you ain't all that anyway. You know what I mean? So really what you want to let them do is be better than you. And being better than you means they are themselves. And that's really hard to do. So you'll be like, you'll have certain feelings about how they should dress, or, you know, what sports they should play, or whether or not they should even play sports, or what religion you want them to be. And it'll be very tempting to try to box them in. And again, I'm saying this out of the mistakes that I've made. So let me not act like this is just what I would tell a father. Don't do that shit. Let them be who they are. Spend time with them and build a friendship with your kids. Develop a friendship with your kids. And that is worth way more than any lecturing that you can do, any disciplining that you can do. And again, there is time to lecture. There's time for discipline, all of that. But focus on building a friendship with the kids. I feel like that would avoid a lot of pain.
Absolutely. You mentioned something that I want to continue a little bit on. You mentioned, like, look, I'm sharing this from making mistakes. One of the things, of course, that we're scared of as fathers is making mistakes and how that's going to, you know, how the kid's going to react, or how our kids are growing up because of the mistakes that we make. How do you work with mistakes? How did you handle your mistakes? And how do you look at, like, being afraid of making mistakes?
That's a great question. First of all, and I actually tell my kids this, all mistakes are not created equal. So there are some mistakes you should be very, very afraid of, and those you should be aware of. You know, so, and that's why I said spend quality time. You got to know your kids, because, like, you have to have a friendship with your kids. For example, if you're not friends with your kids, they won't tell you shit. And if they don't tell you shit, they'll try to figure shit out on their own or talk through on their own. And kids, their brains are not fully developed yet. And then they'll make certain mistakes. And all mistakes that your kids make are not created equal. And you guys, you just use your imagination and think. You got a daughter, what's some shit that can happen to her that you do not want to happen? You know, her, like, you know, getting an F on a test is a lot different than her getting pregnant when she's 15. You see what I'm saying? So I'm aware that not all mistakes are created equal. From there, I also know that there is no manual or handbook for how to parent. There is no blueprint for this shit. There is no right or wrong way to do it. So with that being known and understood, I give myself the opportunity to learn and watch what happens when I do shit. So as a parent, you have to be an observer of results. So, like I said, like, even with parenting and discipline, let's say, like, I know you got two sons. Your sons are not the same. So you kind of have to watch and see what happens when you respond to something in this way or when you respond in that way with each son. You can't fall into dogmatic thinking like, oh, always do this, never do that. There are some of those principles, but very rarely is there like, yeah, always do that. There's not no script for this shit. It's like, you got to understand the foundational principles and tenets of good parenting. And common sense will tell you that, as well as someone like you who can lay that shit out, right? And other experts. But it's knowing there is no handbook for this. I'm going to make a ton of mistakes. Let me just make sure I learn from the ones that I make, and let me make sure I avoid, like the plague, all the ones that I know are going to lead to pain. So some of those are, you know, trying to tell your kids what they need to be and how they need to be, judging your kids for every mistake, being overly harsh and overly critical, not setting any boundaries for your kids is also a critical mistake. Not spending time with your kids and developing friendships with them, talking to them. No matter how many kids you have, you need to spend time with them. So, and it will be hard. It's hard as hell for me to figure out, like, spending time, but it's a constant challenge of mine. So not all mistakes are created equal. However, you're going to make a ton of them, but realize that there is no right or wrong way to parent. Just watch results and adjust accordingly, and always use your vision and your values for your kids as that North Star to sort of guide you in that direction. And you'll feel pain as you go along when you're separating from it. You'll kind of notice. You're like, damn, my kids ain't disciplined at all. Now I'm doing something wrong. You know, so whatever I've been doing ain't working. So let me go ahead and try something else. And you almost approach parenting like a very disciplined scientist. So a disciplined scientist doesn't just do random experiments and blow shit up. He does controlled experiments and he learns from them and documents accordingly. And of course, you know, creates great things. So that's our approach mistakes.
Man, I appreciate that. That's so valuable. I go quick, man, because we got a couple more minutes and there's something that I really want to talk to you about as well. I recently heard that like 50% of all marriages, they end up in divorce. You've actually been through a divorce. Now you're having married. Can you share a little bit of, you know, what are some of the things that you do besides from what you just mentioned, like, you know, realigning and communicating to make sure that, you know, in the beginning of when you're married, your relationship is all fresh and everything is wonderful, and that, you know, over time dies out a little bit. How do you make sure that everything just, you know, continues to stay fresh and you continue to stay, you know, connected with your wife?
Man, that's a good question, man. By the way, I've never been divorced, but bad break. I never was married to my first to my sons, but it was just as bad as a divorce. So it might as well be. But here's what I would say, and this is just my experience. So I don't want to act as if my take on this is right or wrong. To me, I feel like a lot of our images or ideas of relationships are really false. And for that, I mean, just think of kids, right? Kids grow up watching Disney movies, watching television. And what you see through that is like, you know, princess, you know, prince, you know, happily ever after type of shit like that. And I think we underestimate how much that influences how we look at relationships and what they should be like. And so what I mean by that is I feel like we should let go of this idea that your relationship is always going to be fresh and new and happy and fun and spontaneous. Those are periods of time that you will go through. And the goal is to get to a place where you're consistently experiencing those. But my philosophy, and again, this stems as an athlete, how does one grow? Let's just go with muscles. You grow through pain. You grow through pushing yourself to the maximum, stretching, your muscles actually tearing, repairing, and then you grow. And then you see results when you go to the gym. You lift that weight. You're like, yes, I did it. Now, if you want to continue growing, guess what you got to do now? You got to put more weight on there. And then you got to fail to lift that shit. Then your muscles got to tear again. And then sometimes you go to the gym and you'll keep doing that and you'll see a plateau. But if you stop, and that's the learning curve. There's a great book called Mastery where he talks about that. That's the growth curve. You'll do the plateau. And then what will happen? You experience another one. But most people think like, man, I just want to get to the point where me and my wife are just having fun. And listen, it's never like that. I don't know a relationship alive. And if you do, show it to me. Even Will Smith and Jada, you know, everyone likes to idealize even their relationship. And I love what they're doing now. They're doing these YouTube series where they're sitting down and talking about the struggles in a relationship. There are periods of time where Jada Pinkett was depressed. Periods of time where they weren't really vibing. They weren't on the same page. There's also been rumors about certain shit they were doing, and whether or not that's true or not, I'm not sure. But the point is, there is no smooth ride. There's never going to be a time as an entrepreneur where there's no more problems and you're just raking in the dough and everything's cool. Because if you think like that, you're going to be extinct before you know it. Great entrepreneurs know that, and they're basically develop a mindset towards challenges that's like, I love this shit. And it's no different in a relationship. You and your wife should work to develop a bond, a trust in one another that says, I love you, I trust you, and let's go through this shit together. So sometimes it will be you and her teaming up against this problem or challenge. Sometimes it'll be you and her fighting and arguing and not seeing eye to eye. But if you have that foundation strong, you both want the same things from life from a big picture standpoint. You both got clarity on your life and where you're going, and you've been through that pain, and that's a struggle even, right? Because we take for granted the struggle, so we tend to forget how hard it was for us to get to our place of clarity, and then we want to want our wives to get to the same place right away just because we're at that place. It's like, nah, she got her own journey as well. And so to me, I like the idea of developing a partnership, a friendship, a bond with my wife that's unbreakable. So even when we go through tough shit, even when she's annoyed with me, even when I'm annoyed with her, even when I don't agree with all the things she's doing, and even when she doesn't agree with all the things I'm doing, we can grow together. And then through that, we'll have a ton of spontaneous fun times. We'll have vacations, you know, we'll do this, we'll do that. But I just feel like as men, especially, we need to look at life with more of a clear eye and look and say, you know what? Raising kids is hard. Your kids are going to go through some shit. You know what I'm saying? They're going to make some mistakes. Stop wishing that everything was perfect and your kids just turn out like little angels. That's not how it works. And again, even the ones who we think turned out like little angels really ain't little angels. So you have to, we have to be okay with things not being perfect. And I think that's just what makes life what it is anyway. You know what I mean? It's like, and when you start looking at it like that, it just, it relieves pressure actually. And you have more ability to grow, which is what life's about.
Absolutely. So that's a great last question and answer from you to end this with. While I'm asking you the ultimate last question, I just want to mention to all the people that are online with us right now, if you have any extra question, right now is the moment to write it down, and then we'll see if we have a couple of extra minutes to answer that. Niji, for everybody that's been with us and watches later on, if they have any more questions in the future, or if they want to keep following you, listening, for example, to your podcast, how can they follow you? How can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely, man. I'mNotYou.com is the home base. That's where you can find everything. We have two podcasts. I'm Not You is really designed for elite athletes, entrepreneurs, people who are really interested in living life at a high level and dominating under pressure. We have a ton of resources. Killer Instinct is coming out as well, January 10th. It's a 6-month coaching program. Kloss has been through it. It's powerful, man. Put a lot of energy, a lot of time into it, and it's pretty much my entire life's work. And it's valuable. It's life changing. So imnotyou.com. You can go to imnotyou.com/KI if you want to apply to the coaching program. imnotyou.com/SMP if you want to listen to the podcast. Or you just go on iTunes and search for Niji Sobo, NIYISOBO, and you'll find all of the podcasts there. And of course, if you want to email me, just hit me up, NIYI@imnotyou.com.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Do we have time for one question that we got?
Absolutely.
Mihai asks, what's the number one thing you would do different if you were in your father's place?
Ooh, man, that's heavy. Man, if I was in my father's place, my father came from Nigeria when he was 18. He had us four boys. He also had two other kids as well, who are my brother and sister, who grew up with four boys. If I was to do one thing different, I would talk to my sons more. Meaning really take the time to get to know us. And by us, I mean me. You know, I can't speak for my brothers because the question that this person asked was directed to me. I would tell my dad, you should have spoke to me more. Talk to me. Get to know me. Value me in that way. You know, sit me down, talk to me, ask me questions. Act as if you're interested in understanding me, you know. That's what I would do if I was my dad. My dad did a lot of things well. You know, he was disciplined. He's very mission driven, spent a lot of time with us, you know, but I would talk to me more, you know? So that's a good question.
Nice, man. Yeah, it's absolutely a good question. I appreciate that. Thanks for that. And we'll finish with that because your answer is, it's a great advice even for everybody else out there, just, you know, general interest in your kids. So we're going to finish with that. Niji, thank you so much for taking the time to be a guest on my show. It's been a blast. I hope everybody enjoyed it and learned from this. I wish you the best of luck. I will actually talk to you again next week on our call. And everybody that's listening, thank you for joining us. And I'll be live again tomorrow with an old college friend. So if you feel like joining us again, then please do so. All right, peoples. Have a fantastic rest of the day, and we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Peace out.
Are you still meeting up with your friends now that you're a father? Kids making you stress out. You got no time for yourself to work out, read, relax. Can you still remember the time you were hanging out with your friends, feeling energetic, happy, and confident? Spending time together and talking about your life and your crazy dreams. You're feeling alone now, don't you? No one to share your challenges with, and you're just running around from one storm into the next. Well, it's time to change this now. Join me and the Brotherhood of Fearless Fathers to speak on a weekly basis with like-minded dads to crush your challenges, face your fears with determination, be held accountable, and regain control of your life. If you want to become the hero your family needs you to be, then go to becomeafearlessfather.com/brotherhood. Looking forward to seeing you on one of our next calls.